Hello, and welcome to Pause Pop, Positively Pop Culture, where we talk about things we love enthusiastically and without guilt. I'm KW Taylor.
And I'm Carrie Gessner.
And today we're talking about the cult classic film Night of the Comet and the Netflix reality show Love is Blind.
Yeah, we have a bit of a hodgepodge today.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It is.
And we are tired because we're recording this just a couple days before putting it out. It's the first day of daylight saving time, so...
It is.
Yeah. Do you like DST or do you like standard time?
I don't know. I mean, I do like that it gets lighter at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that with DST it stays light until like 9 or almost 10 sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But the switch is so hard.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think there's as much of a reason for it as when we put it in place. So.
Yeah. Well, I wish they would just leave it on DST and not switch back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
But I would prefer it stay on DST because I like it to be lighter at night.
Yeah. Okay.
But I know everybody's like the little children in the buses in the morning.
The little children.
Why don't they just make school later?
Yeah. Yeah. School is too early, in my
school
opinion.
School is too early. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I have an issue.
Oh, no.
I don't think this happens every year.
Uh-huh.
But for listeners, if they don't know, I work in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime I work at a library, an academic library. So anytime the school is on breaks, like during spring break,
uh-huh.
We're only open 8 to 5 and I have to work 8 to 5.
Yeah.
After working till midnight.
Yeah.
For the rest of the semester. So we're on spring break now. It technically started on Friday, but my new schedule starts this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's ever happened where I've had to switch to mornings, but it's also been daylight savings time.
Oh, gosh.
Because I have to be there at 8, but it's going to feel like 7 o'clock now when usually work till midnight.
Yuck.
So that's going to be fun.
That's awful. I'm so sorry. Well, yeah, and I have to get up. I have to get up tomorrow at 6 a.m., which is going to feel like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And so when I leave, it's going to be dark again. So, yeah.
Yikes.
Somebody get us jobs where we can have our preferred schedule and not ever get up before we want to.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I don't know what to segue.
We like nighttime.
Yes, we like nighttime. And you recently watched a cult classic film called Night of the Comet, which I actually have never heard of. I don't know anything about it.
Oh, okay.
So, you want to tell me about it?
Yeah. Okay. So I watched this on a whim last night, so it's very fresh. And I have heard of this, but I've never seen it. And I don't know why I've never seen it, because it is kind of very much in my oeuvre. It's in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's from 1984. And it's a science fiction horror comedy. It had a very low budget. Its budget in 1984 was only $700,000. And it has since gone on to cult classic status and has like a 80% approval on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff. And it's just considered like really great. And it's not the full basis of Buffy Summers from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
But it definitely contributed to the inspiration. I do think that the creator was very charmed by this film. So, yeah, and it was written and directed by this guy, Tom Everhart, who's done a lot of other sort of comedy things and stuff with slightly larger budgets. So basically, the premise of this is that there is about to be, right before Christmas, there is about to be a comet that coincided with the extinction of the dinosaurs. So it's the same, it's jokingly it's the same comet that did that, and it's coming back. And everybody is like having comet watching parties, and they're running around. And this takes place in Los Angeles. And our protagonist is Regina, or Reggie Belmont, played by Catherine Mary Stewart. And she works in an old-timey movie theater. It's like a very low rent sort of movie theater that seems like it's got a single screen, and it seems like they show classic movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really care about the comet. She is like a video game connoisseur. She's like, in the beginning, she can't even be bothered to do her job because she's playing Tempest, which is an old video game, in the theater lobby. And her boss has to keep telling her, like, go do your job. And she's like, no, I have to maintain all my high scores. And she gets super annoyed because she puts Reg, R-E-G, for all her little scores in the game. And she notices that the sixth highest score placer has the initials DMK, and she's like, who is this? This is not cool. So she's already all mad and in a bad mood. So she calls home to her sister Samantha, or Sam, who is played by Kelly Maroney, and she's trying to get their dad is out of the country on some mission. He's like a military guy. So they've been staying with their stepmother, Doris, who is a big pill. And Reggie is basically trying to get like fake permission to go to a fake comet watching party that's going to last all night for part of a science class. This is all a lie because she wants to stay at the movie theater all night with her boyfriend who also works there. So she wants to like be sneaky. And Doris is awful and like is super mean to Sam and makes it clear that Reggie is not allowed to do just whatever she wants and that Sam has to stay and also help with the comet watching party that Doris is making. And Doris even slaps Sam. It's really not cool.
Oh.
And Reggie is like, well, you know what? I'm 18. I don't care if I'm still in high school. I'm actually 18. So she can kick sand and I'm just going to do whatever I want. So she just goes ahead without permission and stays at the movie theater with her boyfriend, Larry, who's the projectionist. And part of the reason they're staying there all night is that Larry is trying to sell, or like he's doing something where he's like helping people steal the movie reels to make copies of them. And then he's like pocketing some profit. Like he's charging $100-some for people to come borrow the movie theater movies, copy it, bring it back. So he has to wait there all night. So he has Reggie stay with him.
Gotcha.
And they also make a point of saying that the projection booth where they're staying the night is lined with steel to prevent fire, because movie celluloid is really flammable for one thing. And these are all very old movies. So they happen to sleep in this steel lined container, basically.
Okay.
And meanwhile, Sam is so upset by how Doris treated her, so she actually goes, she like sneaks out and sleeps in a steel backyard shed for the night.
Okay.
And it's also kind of important to note that Sam is a little bit of a kind of, they're both from the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, and Sam is like a cheerleader and like bubbly and blonde, and Reggie is a little bit more, she's like the smart brunette basically. So they're sisters, but they have these sort of types. But they also get along and they're close in age and stuff, but Sam is a little more, you know, the stereotypical cheerleader valley girl of the early 80s. So anyway, overnight the comet comes. And Reggie wakes up and starts to like, Larry leaves to go get the movie or something. And when he leaves, he is killed by a zombie. There's a zombie outside. And in a twist that I do not like, the zombies can talk, which seems bad. Do not like that. Also, the sky is all red and there's just clothing everywhere. Like piles of clothes with like dust on it, which seems not great. So Reggie's waiting for Larry. He doesn't come back. So she gets up and goes outside and she finds his keys. And then she sees the zombie who killed Larry and is like, okay. And she like kind of punches him out and stuff. She knows some self-defense. So she's able to get on. Larry has a motorcycle. She gets on his motorcycle and tries to go home. And like, there is no traffic. There is nobody out downtown LA. And it seems bad. So she goes home and she finds Sam. And Sam is like all mad about their stepmother and she's not really paying attention. And then Reggie is like, something bad happened. I don't know. Like, whatever. And like, they go, it's a Saturday morning. They go outside of their little suburban house. And Reggie is like, where are all the kids playing? And Sam is like in stunned denial. And then Reggie even like finds clothes in their backyard of the people at the Comet watch party. And she's like, this is Doris, and like finds Doris's clothes and like a big pile of ash. It's like, wow. Yeah, we can't. This is bad. Meanwhile, Sam has had the radio on this whole time, just playing music. And they notice, oh, there's a DJ on the air. But he's acting normal and he's just talking about the music and they're playing commercials and all this. So they decide, all right, well, why don't we go to the radio station because there might be somebody there. But when they get there, it's just tapes. It's just a pre-recorded, automated show. But there's this guy, Hector, who's a truck driver, and he's there and he's worried that there are zombies, but he's like, no, you're not zombies. I'm not a zombie. And he apparently slept in his steel truck all night in the back of the truck.
I'm sensing a pattern.
Yes. So there's something about you get to survive if you did not get exposed to the comet rays. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to spoil much more than that. But anyway, so they're the three like survivors of this disaster. But Sam does start to... like, she overrides the pre-recorded radio show, and she starts trying to broadcast on the air. And at first, she's just being kind of silly about it, but then she's kind of like, is anybody there? You know, whatever. So, like, to kind of lead into where I will probably stop recounting the plot, somebody does hear them. So,
oh, all right.
But the tone of this whole thing is really, like, funny. It is... lighthearted. I mean, it's not like jokey funny. It's like tonally funny, kind of, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of action. The girl's dad, who's like a military guy, has kind of trained them in certain things. So they know about weaponry and self-defense, which is helpful. And the truck driver guy seems also kind of like good at stuff like that. And the zombies are, you know, low rent, silly looking things. And there is this idea that if you were exposed to a lot of the comet, you turn to dust immediately. You just are extinguished. But if you get a little bit of it, that's how you get a zombie. Like if you were inside but in a non-sealed environment, that's the zombification. And that the zombies are gonna turn to dust. They're just doing it more slowly, and they're gonna try to kill you in between, basically.
Okay, interesting.
And that there's a small amount of people who just happened to be in hermetically sealed things all night and did not get exposed to it.
So do the zombies still eat brains?
They seem to want to eat you, yeah.
Okay.
And they kind of just kill you. I don't think that you get turned into a zombie.
Okay.
You pretty much just get killed.
Yeah.
But the fact that they can move at a normal speed, they're not like faster. They're just normal human speed. And they can still talk. They're not really like dead. They're like infected by the whatever gamma.
Okay.
Whatever. It's not. You don't need to worry about
rays.
It. Yeah. I don't know what kind of rays.
Just go with it.
Just go with it. And one funny thing I read about this was that because their budget was so low and everything was on this little shoestring, that if the director was like, okay, if you screw something up, you kind of have to just react in character and just keep going because I cannot afford multiple shots. So there's like a lot of little things that I didn't notice when I watched it that like, oh, okay, that was actually like somebody's gun jams. So they just are like, oh, well, I guess my gun jammed. It wasn't supposed to. And yeah. They just go with it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the thing is, the two girls who play the sisters, they are really cute together. They bond a lot. And yet they also have a complicated relationship. The part of the thing that sort of starts in the beginning is that Reggie and Hector start to kind of get close. And then Sam is like, I guess I'm going to be alone forever, because if we are the last three people on Earth and you guys pair up, I'm just like this third wheel. And it's really sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I just found it really charming. There are some like villain characters that pop up, and it just has a lot of that. You know how you like that neon feel stuff? There's a lot of that. So for being an old movie, and I know that's not your favorite, there is a little bit of that weird neon synth kind of style that might appeal to you. Randomly, okay. The radio station that's unmanned randomly has all this like neon light fixture stuff going on for no reason. There's no one there. Presumably, people don't really come there very often. They come to maybe change the tapes and that's it. So why did they leave it with all this stuff on? So that doesn't make any sense. There are a couple of logical leaps that are sort of like, well, wait, how did that work? But they don't really dwell on it and they don't make a big deal of it. So that you're able to really suspend your disbelief and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, it's real cute. It's funny. It's not that gruesome. It's PG-13.
Okay.
You know, I think it's just kind of very of its time. It, honestly, though, it even feels older than 1984. So I wonder, they may have been filming it in 83. I can tell like a stylistic difference in like low budget films from like 1980 versus 1985. To me, there is a marked difference. And this feels older than 1984. But
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like it owes a lot to the movie Valley Girl, which is one of my favorites, which we've talked about on the pod. And again, it inspired Buffy pretty clearly. And the women are very, like, capable. They don't, I mean, they have moments where it's like, this is not going to work out great. This is sad and this is scary. But they also just kind of, like, they get through it. And they have danger, but they're never like, I don't know. They're never seeming to be super at anybody's, what do I want to say? Like, they're not victims, I guess, is what I want to say. They're not damsels in distress. They are trying to solve problems. They are trying to get through it. They don't feel like they need anybody. They want Hector around, but they also don't seem like they absolutely have to have him around. So that's kind of nice. And they're very capable. And Sam actually has repeated nightmares where she's worried that she's going to get victimized, but she, like, because those are her nightmares, it's interesting to me. And it seems like that would be her, you know, her moment of horror would ever be not being in charge, I guess. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you never feel like they're really objectified per se, or that the men are in control. They are in control. So I think it's kind of a feminist statement. And yeah, just really weird and quirky and a kind of different take on zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's totally on my list. It would be fun to watch like with you.
Okay. Okay.
Like next time I come visit, you could show me
it. Okay. Oh, I gotta say, it's a short 95 minutes.
We love a good short movie.
We love a good short
especially
movie.
Especially since I saw Dune 2 yesterday, which was 2 hours and 46 minutes.
Ew. Yuck.
Yeah. I was like, this is too long. This is too long.
No.
So a 90-minute movie is perf.
Yes, it's perf. I do kind of wish I had watched it around Christmas.
Yeah.
Because it takes place close to Christmas. So.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, I don't know, yeah, I'm not sure if it's for you per se. I don't think you would hate it. I think there are things about it you would find really cute.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Where did you say it was streaming?
I streamed it. It is streaming. I watched it on the Roku channel for free. It did have a couple of ads, but not too bad. It's also streaming free on Freevee, so you can probably find it a lot of other similar places.
Very cool.
Yeah. But you have been watching something else kind of lighthearted that you are abruptly obsessed with.
And also embarrassed by.
No, we don't do that here.
That's true.
Without guilt.
That's true.
Yes.
Yes. So the background is my family is supposed to come visit this weekend. And in preparation for that, because my niece and nephews were coming and also the new season of Girls 5 Eva is going to start this week.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Netflix account and I only intend to keep it for a month or two. We'll see how that goes. But I thought, you know, I thought the kids might like to watch stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but then they didn't come.
Oh.
Because my niece got sick. So now I had like abruptly had a 4-day weekend where I was like, oh, I don't have much to do. And I had seen some stuff about Love is Blind on Twitter, and I was like, that sounds really crazy. But I wanted to watch something that wouldn't really stimulate me intellectually, I guess. Like, I didn't really want anything scripted. So I was like, let me just pop this on. And I had it on in the background while I was like, I was finishing up like a solo board game. So I wasn't like totally paying attention to it.
Uh-huh.
But then I just got hooked because it's so weird and out there. But okay. Do you know anything about it?
Barely.
Okay. I started with season 6 because it just came out, but it's 6 seasons.
Uh-huh.
Sorry. That was silly. And it's hosted by Nick and Vanessa Lachey.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say hosted, I mean that very loosely. Maybe they did more in season 1. I don't know. Maybe they're just like, you should be used to this by now. But they basically have only showed up for a couple minutes at the beginning of each phase.
Okay.
And then they're going to host a reunion episode that comes out this week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So the first phase is the pods.
Okay. This is a reality show, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Sorry. It's a reality dating show specifically. Okay. And people theoretically come on it to find a spouse.
Okay.
So they put you in this building and they split you up by gender. So there's the men's quarters and the women's quarters. And in the middle are the pods. So the men's quarters lead to one hallway and the women's quarters lead to another hallway. And then there's a separate door for each pod. And the pods on each side are connected in a way that you can't see each other, but you can talk and have a conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the emphasis is on trying to make an emotional connection with your partner versus a physical one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't know what they look like at all.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, you should be okay with that when you sign up for the show.
Yeah.
And I looked it up and they only have 10 days in the pods.
Oh.
Yeah, which is not a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess they don't want to keep you in there for too long because you don't have your phone or anything. You're not allowed to have contact with the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
So they all just have notebooks and they're writing their notes down about their dates. And you date like everyone at first and then you kind of narrow it down. Oh, I still want to talk to them. I still want to talk to them. And then you have fewer and fewer dates each day, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And most people like end up very quickly with one or two people that they're interested in. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that works out because the other person is interested in them and sometimes it doesn't.
Oh.
So we had some crazy issues in the pods. One guy, he was being all romantic to this woman.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I will use names because their names are out there. But so Matthew was like waxing rhapsodic about AD Amber Desiree. And he was like, yeah, you're the only one for me. And like, I'll ask your father's hand in marriage. And if it doesn't work out or something, we could just leave here tonight. And she found it really romantic. And then she went back to the women's quarters and he had apparently said the same things to another woman named Amber.
Oh, no.
And AD was like, oh, okay. So that's like the end of the first episode. It builds up this big romantic thing and then it tears it down when you find out that he just was saying the same stuff to two women.
Oh. Now, okay, can the people in the like women's versus men's sections, they can see each other?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They like the women all live together, the men all live together. So okay. They can like debrief after their dates and stuff.
Okay.
And sort of be like, wait, are you interested in this person? Because I'm interested in this person.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of like it helps in some ways, I think, because mm-hmm. you can kind of talk that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in the same person. But there were like some love triangles that didn't work out too
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So one was this guy named Jimmy and Chelsea and Jess.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I didn't really like Jimmy in the pods. He had some weird reactions to, like, Jess has a 10-year-old kid. Mm. And Chelsea had been married before to her high school sweetheart for like 5 years. And he just had some weird reactions to both those. Like, it kind of seemed like he didn't expect women to have lives before which I wasn't a fan of. But he has like a really hard time picking between Jess and Chelsea. And Jess is like, I don't know, she gets upset enough that I think he is like, you're a little bit too direct and would give me too much crap about stuff. So he ends up picking Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Actually, that was a quadrangle because Chelsea was also into Trevor. And Trevor was like, you're the only one for me. You're the only one I'm dating here. And Trevor's really sweet. And I was kind of upset when Chelsea chose Jimmy over Trevor. Oh, one more triangle was Jeremy, who spells his name in a stupid way. It's like J-E-R-A-M-Y.
Gross.
Jeremy was talking to Laura and Sarah Ann. Mm-hmm. And he decided on Laura, and Laura liked him a lot too. But then there are repercussions down the line from that love triangle. Mm-hmm. And then there are a couple other matches that came out of it. So there's Kenneth and Brittany and Clay and AD and Johnny and Amy. Johnny and Amy are really sweet. They're like the only, I think Aww. They might be the only ones who make it this season.
Oh no.
So I'm not totally done with the season, but okay. I know where some things are headed.
Okay.
So that lasts 10 days and you can make your match earlier than the 10 days, but like, your match is only made if the guy proposes.
Oh, goodness. Oh.
Yeah. So, and it's also really weird because, like, the guy is always down on one knee and proposing. And, like, he can't see her and she can't see him. And it's just like, this is the weirdest proposal ever. But okay. And then once he proposes, then they get to go in this little hallway. And they're each at the end, the opposite ends, and the door slides up and they see each other for the first time.
Oh, goodness.
And it's really, yeah, it's weird, but sometimes it's really sweet because they're like, oh, it doesn't matter what we look like. You know, I fell in love with who you are and stuff like that. So I get sort of the idea behind it, but it's also just like, wow, this is wild.
Yeah.
And then even if they make that match, they still have to live in their separate quarters for the whole time. Assume that they can like talk and do their dates, but they're not talking to anyone else really. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have 10 days for that. And then if you have a match at the end of 10 days, they move you into this apartment building. So mm-hmm. you're living together
okay.
for a month. Oh, sorry. Everyone goes on vacation together for a week. and then you have the month of living together. And then the wedding, apparently. And at the beginning of each of these phases, Nick and Vanessa pop up for like a second to be like, here's what's happening. And so I think there were like five couples that went. They went to the Dominican Republic this time. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because they all get together and like kind of some of them dated each other for a while in these pods. And they do refer to it as dating. And I'm like, was that dating? Like, maybe we don't have to be so like, this is my ex, because
yeah,
you know, you had a couple of talking dates.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because they all sort of start to compare themselves to the other couples.
Oh.
And I'm like, this feels not great.
Yeah.
And then like the most intense part starts where I think they actually lived together for 3 weeks before the wedding. Mm-hmm. But you see them, like, meeting each other's families and friends and, like, going through all of the conversations of, like, what is living together going to be like? And what are your hangups? And, oh, I can't leave dirty dishes in the sink and stuff. So, like, that part all makes sense. But that's the part I'm on now. And everything, like, things are falling apart because so for Jimmy and Chelsea, I think Chelsea seems kind of insecure that he had also been close to sort of proposing to another woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that affects their relationship. And also they do some activities, like they had a day at the lake, and like some of the people who did not get matched got invited. So like Trevor was there and Jess was there, both of their exes, I guess. So it makes for good like drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, so Jeremy and Laura are together, but he had been talking to Sarah Ann in the pods, and Sarah Ann like messaged him on Instagram. I know. And she was like, if you change your mind. And then they got together and talked one night, and he didn't get home till 5:30. And Laura was very mad.
Oh no.
So some of it gets really like dramatic, and I'm like, you people are not ready to get married.
No.
It's so silly. So that's kind of the part I'm at now. And then comes the weddings. Mm-hmm. And I don't think all five of those couples are going to make it to the altar.
Mm-hmm.
And then even if they do, there's no guarantee that they're both going to say yes. So I know, right? So I don't know how many couples exactly come out of this one, but it's just, I don't know. It's so silly. I don't And I can't really sell you on it, because unless you want something messy, like it feels very much like when I watch Selling Sunset, like these people are being dramatic, and this is a situation that I would never find myself in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit escapist in that way.
Yeah.
I do think everyone calls it the experiment. And I'm like, that's a little bit generous, because it's not that scientific.
No.
But I do think the experiment is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do love the idea of like only making that verbal and emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And not really basing anything on looks. But I guess the issues I have with it are, one, everything's so compressed. Like, you're trying to find a spouse in 10 days. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, all of these people are conventionally attractive.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, what is the actual point?
Yeah. But I guess they don't want to be, I don't want to put it like this, but like if I put people who are not conventionally attractive in there,
yeah,
they run the risk of being treated very badly.
Yes, exactly.
So.
Yeah. And one thing that does kind of come out of it is a few people date people who aren't really their type.
Yeah.
And there's one interracial match. Kenneth is black and Brittany is white.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of like, oh, I've never dated a white woman before.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't last. They broke up really quick and really fast. And I was like, wow, okay, aww, you guys seem so nice together. So yeah, it kind of seems like not everyone is actually there for the right, I don't want to say for the right reasons, because that sounds so like reality television.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't feel like some people are ready to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they make that proposal and then they come out and they're living together, I feel like reality sort of sets in and they're like, wait, maybe I don't want to get married.
Yeah.
So I think it can really be interesting, but it probably depends on like the personalities who get picked and mm-hmm. the matches that get made.
Mm-hmm.
They do pick people from the same city. So this one is set in Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is smart, because then no one's like moving very far or anything.
Yeah.
You know, you're not suddenly in love with someone who lives across the country.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know how they pick the people that go on, or if there's any sort of evaluation where, you know, relationship coaches or something are like, well, this person and this person might be good together on paper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know how that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if you sent people in and you knew there were some really good matches on paper, I feel like, I don't know, it could be a really cool experiment. Like, I don't know, it's just an interesting condensed version of modern dating, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could work out with the right people. but it usually does not, I assume.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody getting married on there and staying married.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That sounds really stressful. You know, I don't like stress or emotions.
Yeah, but I did tell you it reminds me of Selling Sunset a little bit, which you love. Minus the houses.
Yeah.
It's just the interpersonal drama.
Okay. But that's my least favorite part of Selling Sunset.
That's true. As I was saying that, I was like, oh, wait, you like the houses.
I like the houses. I don't care about the people.
Yeah. Well, if you want something like in the background, I feel like this is fine.
Okay.
I just ended up getting sucked in a little bit more than I thought I would.
I could. You know, I used to like The Circle a lot. And I feel like it has that quality.
Yeah. It does remind me of The Circle a little bit because no one is really lying about who they are, unless they're also lying to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I may give it a shot.
You don't have to.
Well, no, but I mean, it's intriguing enough that I might watch one and see what I think. Do you think it's good to start? Is this season? You haven't watched any other season, so.
I have not. I will probably finish season 6 today, though. And I think I'm going to go back and start with season 1 so I can let you know.
Okay.
And I'll definitely let you know if Vanessa and Nick do more hosting.
That's weird.
In season 1. I know. Yeah. I think once the reunion episode will come out, I think they'll have more to do. But I just got the sense of like, wait, everyone, it's season 6. Everyone knows what's happening.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, that sounds fun.
It is. It's entertaining, I think. But I don't necessarily recommend it if that's not your usual thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. So.
I don't tend to watch a lot of dating shows, but
yeah.
I do like unconventional reality competition sometimes. So, yeah. I don't know. I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Cool.
If you do want to watch it, it's on Netflix, and if you want to watch Night of the Comet, that is available on the Roku channel and Freevee with ads and probably a few other streaming services.
Yeah. And next time we'll be talking about more great pop culture stuff, so be sure to join us soon.
Our theme music is by Joseph McDade.
You can find our website at positivelypopculture.com, and from there you can find the link to the merch store, as well as our email, positivelypopculture@gmail.com.
And please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening, stay healthy and safe, and join us next time for another episode of Pause Pop.